Welcome. This is Jean Maroney of Thinking Directions. And today I'm offering a teaser class, basically, called a goal vetting session. This is an experiment. I do an awful lot of goal vetting in the launch program that is an 8-week program that runs a few times a year, where people come in with a major goal. And one of the things I do when we first start is they think they know what their goal is, and I make them go through a process and we vet their goal to make sure that the goal is set in such a way that they can actually achieve it. Because I think there's a lot of misunderstandings about how to set a goal so you can achieve it. If you don't set the goal right, it can be a real problem because you start thinking about this wonderful thing that will happen and you get all kinds of expectations about that. You get excited about it. And then if you don't see progress toward it, you start getting disappointment. And the deflated expectations you can actually get depressed by setting a goal and then not achieving it, which is really a shame because setting goals is such an important part of a happy life. But if you don't do it right, you can actually really get discouraged. And of course, the only reason to set a goal is because you want to actually get the result. A goal is a result that you have decided you intend to achieve this result. And so it's some actual outcome that you can observe and that you can tell when you've got there. One of the challenges about goals is it depends very much what time scale you're talking about, how clear you need to be. It's completely fine to have as a vision for the future some kind of vague and abstract thing. Like I started out with a vision of I was going to teach adults how to recover from problems they had in their thinking from progressive education. That was my original vision. Now it's still in that direction, but it's different. But that was very vague. I had no idea how I was going to do that. But I knew what the shorter term goal was to master my own thinking, learn my own thinking skills and learn things that then the next step was to see whether I could teach people anything. And so I set much shorter term goals that were much more concrete. I thought to start out, it would be helpful to just talk about the different time scales for goals and what you need for each time scale of the goal in order to have it really effectively work for you. So that's why I made this handout, and I'm going to basically talk through this handout for a few minutes. So first of all, visions. This is a long-range goal of greater than a year. Now, remember, a really important thing about something that's that long-range is you really don't know what is going to happen between now and a year from now. You really don't. So, in 2020, it was the pandemic that surprised us all, or maybe there were a few people who weren't surprised, but most of us were very surprised between January 1st and April 1st about the pandemic. The stock market is doing crazy things this year. Who knows where it's going to land? There are a lot of things that are unpredictable. And so if you have a goal that is a year or longer, it better have some adaptability built into it. But it does provide you some direction. It makes a big difference if you know you are out, like me, I'm out to educate people. Okay, that definitely is a particular direction that's very different from the direction I had before, which was to be an engineer, which was, to design hardware. That's a very different direction. And at least getting some kind of overall direction is very, very helpful. But it can be fairly abstract and vague. It can be, sometimes your vision is something that you've got a kind of idea of what it is, and you don't know exactly how to make it real. And part of the work you're doing in the shorter term is figuring out, well, what do I want this to really look like? If you start a business, that's often the case. A lot of startups, they spend some time figuring out, they have some general idea of what market they want to serve, but they spend some time figuring out, well, who exactly is the customer and how do we actually think we can help them? And that's part of the first work is if you have only a vague direction, figuring out, well, what more specifically am I going to do? As a result of this, there's usually not a clear path to success. Now, there are some exceptions. If you want to get a bachelor's degree in computer engineering, and you enroll at Georgia Tech. I have one of my best friends is a professor in the Department of Computer Engineering at Georgia Tech. And I am sure if you met with her, she could lay you out a four-year plan to have a great degree in computer engineering in 4 years. And you'd know exactly the courses you should take, and you'd have a lot of guidance, and there would be really nothing that you needed to think about. So not all long-range goals have no clear path to success, but the ones that do have a clear path to success are the ones where basically a lot of other people have had pretty much this exact same goal, and they've laid it out, and there are people who can tell you, do this and this and this and this. And okay, that's great when it happens, but that's not generally the way that you think about long-range goals. Long-range goals, usually you're the one who's going to have to figure out what those steps are going to be. And of course, that's the big difference from being in college versus being out of college. Suddenly, you need to be figuring out what your long-range goals are. You get kind of this intermediate step between high school and career, where the college kind of puts some boundaries on this, but then it becomes your baby. What I think is most important for long-range goals is that they be deeply meaningful. When you choose a long-range goal, you're saying, look, I'm going to put a lot of my time and effort over a period of time, years, months and years on this. And so this, a significant piece of my life is going to be devoted to this. And that means it needs to be something that you think is important and is valuable to you. So if this is a personal goal, it needs to involve something like your lifetime goals involving health or your relationships or your sense of self. You know, like you might be setting a goal of if you have some issues with independence, you might wind up setting a goal of being completely independent and self-sufficient in some way. And of course, career is the big one. I think if you are on the Thinking Directions newsletter, you got five articles on setting a central purpose, which I think it's very important that be something that you care about. And I wrote about that a lot in the blog. Now, meaningful is a little different if you're in a business situation. If you're in a business situation, what you're really talking about is strategic goals that will implement the vision of a business. So when you have a going concern, it exists in order to serve certain customers in a certain way. So like I used to, when John Allison was at BB&T, I used to do a lot of work for BB&T, and their mission was to be the best bank possible. And they wanted to do anything they could to make it easier for their clients to manage their finances and deal with their money. And so they had strategic goals that would help with that. And that's what made it meaningful within the business, is it was actually tied to the business goals, which served the customer, which of course then created the profit and made the company flourish. But they can be, as I said, visions can be relatively long range. Now, you've got to bring that to the present. If you just leave them as long range, nothing ever happens on them. The action is in the present. And the first step to that is to bring them down to objectives. And here I'm actually copying the language of the OKR methodology, objectives and key results, which has become very popular in a lot of entrepreneurial circles. So I'm trying to match the scope that is used in that kind of goal setting. And for this, I would say an objective is between 1 month and 1 year. And an objective always helps. It's something that is a step of some kind, a major step toward achieving the vision. And it gets its meaning from that vision. So like, for example, a objective that I had a little over a year ago was to start what is now the Launch Program, which is an 8-week program, which is an add-on to the Thinking Lab, essentially. And the reason I wanted to do that was to provide something that had more coaching available, some way to do scalable coaching for me, for people who had these projects, and also to help people who had specific issues with goals, to teach them about my tools and how to use that. So it was a very delimited project, but it was a means to the larger project of teaching people all the kind of productivity and thinking skills that I teach. The objective needs to be also an end in itself, in the sense that you can point to it and say, I did that, that's complete, it's got value in and of itself. So when that program finished, I can say, wow, look, we ran 30 people through this program. Look at how many have had success. Look at what we did with it. Done. It's complete. And of course, part of this is because you've brought in the time frame, you also should be able to estimate whether you can achieve it or not. And so the realism level needs to be higher. The vision can be very abstract and vague, but you need to really think that you have the resources to achieve an objective. And so if this is personal, this means you, with the time you have, you know, working alone or, you know, whatever that means, maybe you have a coach, you can actually, you think you can do it. So when I set out that program, I had a team with me. If you set out as a, maybe your vision was to redo your house to be gorgeous, right? And maybe an objective would be to redo the living room. Okay, do you have the money? You need to actually set that objective in a way that you have the money for it and you have the time to do it. If you're going to be working 80 or 90 hour weeks for the duration, you probably won't be able to do that. If you don't have any money and you don't have any means of doing the painting and things yourselves, it's not a good objective. It needs to be something where you actually think you have the resources for it. And of course, in a business, this is different. In a business, there's a team, there are multiple people, but do you have actually people who can be assigned to this project to get it done? That's maybe obvious, but I think it's worth saying. We went from being airy fairy and we don't know how we're going to do it to, okay, well, this is delimited. It's going to be a real thing. It's going to be done in a certain number of months. And I have certain resources. And I think these resources are reasonable. It still may not be done exactly then, which brings us to key results, which I think are things that you can get done in less than 2 weeks of full-time effort. Now, you won't hear that particular definition of a key result other places, but there's a really important distinction between things that you can get done in less than 2 weeks of effort and things that take longer than that. This is something I learned when I was working at the Starfire Optical Range with Bob Fugate. If you've heard a bunch of my stuff, you've heard Bob Fugate stories. I just spoke on the phone with him last week. He's retired now, but he was a productive dynamo, and he led the field experiments in laser guide star adaptive optics that I had the privilege of working on when I was a young engineer. And when we were working on this project, I won't explain the project, but it was very complicated. There were about 25 of us working on it. It had never been done before. And we were trying to get the first experimental system together. And he observed at a certain point, it was supposed to be done in 3 months. It was actually done in a year. And he observed about halfway through that, he said, you know, I've noticed something. When I ask the engineers when they're going to get finished with a particular piece of the project, if they tell me something less than 2 weeks, it means it's probably going to get done. And if they tell me 2 weeks or anything larger than that, it means they don't know. And I think there's something objective about this. I think it's difficult to project how much effort is involved in something that is longer than that. And in fact, if you look at people who are really good at planning longer range than that, they are planning things that they have done before, where they can make a pretty good estimate of what something's going to take based on what time it took before. But if you haven't done it before, there is a lot of difficulty in getting in your head just how complex that is. And you can hold about 2 weeks of complexity in your head. So I'm just putting this out here as an empirical observation. I think you need to have a kind of goal that is something you really do believe you can get done in less than 2 weeks. Because if you have moral certainty that you can do that, you probably have a pretty good idea of what's involved, because you wouldn't have that confidence if you didn't. And so that's what I think key results are. And if any of you use OKR and want to talk about, well, how does this relate to what you use there, I can tell you why I think it is the right term and it does relate to OKRs. But for our purposes, we're just going to say it's something you can do in less than 2 weeks of full-time effort. This is something that needs to be clear-cut, doable, and important. Clear-cut, doable, and important. I'll tell you, if you've learned about quote-unquote SMART goals, that's specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and timely, exactly the same as clear-cut, doable, important. But I think clear-cut, doable, and important is an easier way to hold that, because it tells you exactly what you need. It needs to be clear-cut. Yes, I can absolutely tell if I got this done. Doable, I can definitely get this done in the allotted time. Important, this would really matter. If I get this done, it would really matter. That is what you want for a key result. And the thing that I see is that what people sometimes do for a key result is, well, take the first 10 steps. But at the end of the first 10 steps, they haven't gotten anywhere at all interesting. You need to make sure at the end of your 2 weeks, you have some observable progress. And that is where all the creativity comes in setting goals. And that's the part that I wind up coaching on the most, because the short-term goal needs to be meaningful also. And if you don't see that it is materially moving you toward what your vision is, of what you really want to have happen, it needs to materially move you toward an objective, which moves you toward a vision. If you don't get that, you won't get the benefit of setting this great key result. The benefit of a key result is if you can see that something can be done by you in less than 2 weeks, and that it's important, and oh my God, if I got that done, that would be great. What will happen? You will start marching toward the goal, and the goal will motivate you to take that action. And that is how goal setting can be really the main motivator of your work. It's the main way that you motivate by values instead of by threats, is by setting the goals well. But there's definitely some creativity in bringing the vague and abstract vision into something that is clear-cut, doable, and important. So as I said in the announcement for this, we're going to spend the rest of this time actually talking about real people's goals and vetting them. So if you would like to have your goal vetted, just raise your electronic hand and get in the queue. And I'm going to just go to the top of the line here. I know we've got a couple people, and we will start vetting goals. So Tom, I know you had emailed me in advance, so I know you've actually got a couple. Why don't we do one, and then we'll do a couple other people, and then we'll come back to you. Is that okay with you?
Sure thing.
So why don't you tell us about, I mean, you wrote to me, but tell everybody about your goal and or your vision and the two questions I had. What's the long-range positive vision? I'll just ask them to you. What's the long-range positive vision? Tell us about this goal.
Gene, before, which one would you rather I do as a good example? The longer-term one or the more like 2 month, this quarter kind of goal?
So this should be guided by your selfish interests.
All right. Okay. I'll do the longer term one. So my goal is, you said, what is the long range positive vision?
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I want to move to the US. Mm-hmm. I live in Canada right now. And I want to move there because that is where I think I will flourish in the long term.
Okay. And what does that mean to you? What does flourishing mean?
Well, it means that where I move, there will be more opportunity with my work. I have more friends there that share the same values. And I think just overall, my quality of living will be better where I plan on moving. It'll be less expensive. And overall, just my access to the things that I like will be greater.
Okay. So I just want to point out something so this is a little bit vague, right? So, well, I think I'll have more friends. I'll have more opportunities. There are going to be more things I like. It's going to be less expensive. It's a little bit vague. And that's totally fine for a long-range vision. Although for this particular long-range vision, the thing that concerns me is one part of it is not vague at all, right? The move to the USA part is totally concrete. So in this case, I think you need to get really clear on what the values are that you think are different. So let's now look at the negative vision. What happens if you stay in Canada?
Yeah.
And what does that mean?
So the negative values that I'm trying to eliminate is I want to leave a place where I don't feel welcome or valued for my own.
Is this the political situation?
Yeah.
Okay.
Politically, and then, well, I mean, socially, in the sense that, like, it's hard to find people who share similar values. And that is reflective also of the political situation.
Okay. And so, you know, we got a mixture of people here on the call, but you are, I know you, so I'm pretty sure this is like pro-capitalism, pro-freedom, individual rights, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right. Which is, you know, not widespread anywhere, but there are certainly pockets in the US where there are large groups interested.
Yeah. And at least implicitly, those things are like, at least even individualism is valued a bit more in some places.
Yes. Okay, great. And so, so just to be clear, so we're actually getting even clearer here that this is partly having people who have similar social values and personal values. And there are, say, some pockets, and you can probably name, because I can name, you can probably name 5 or 10 cities in the US that would be a great place for you to move.
Yeah, I've already done that, yeah.
Right, okay. So I just pointing this out because you want to be very clear on, well, what are you actually after? Because living in, I mean, I'm just going to make up something, right? Living in northern Maine, I grew up in Maine, so I can make jokes about Maine. Living in Aroostook County in Millinocket might not do the trick for you.
Yeah.
Right. So you actually have a clearer vision than the way you first stated it. And do you have friends in the United States already?
Yeah, I have a lot.
Okay, so this is also, it's not, oh, I think I could make more friends. It's, oh, I had friends, and look, they tend to be geographically located over there. So yeah. Let me be closer to my friends. So this is all, you see, this is all, and so what I'm guessing is you're also feeling maybe a little bit isolated and lonely where you are.
That's true, yeah.
So that's part of the negative vision. Okay, this is very important for just getting clear on what the goal is. Mm-hmm. And forgive me if I get personal, and just stop me if I get personal.
Oh, it's very personal, but it's fine.
Okay, yeah. But if it's something that you want to keep private, that's what I really wanted to say. Mm-hmm. No one should ever be pressed to say, to share something that's private. Okay, so how much time do you have to work on this goal?
Well, when I read this, I said, and maybe I'm going to be critical of my own words here, but I said it's a goal that it can't really be reached through just spending a lot of time at once on it. It needs constant work, and I don't know how much to improve my skill set, to market myself, and then think about also what the right path is to the US, because there are a lot of different alternatives. Mm-hmm. And likely it's for my work because of my engineering background. Mm-hmm. So I have to market myself, and that takes time, and it takes other skills that aren't directly related to this goal to achieve this one.
Yeah. Right. So this is also why I wanted to start with the vision. So you've actually already got a few different possible objectives in mind. Mm-hmm. Like one of your objectives, which he told me in his email, was you could conceivably just get transferred within your company to an American branch, right? And that would that would solve a lot of immigration issues and a lot of other things.
Easier said than done.
Easier said than done, but it is a potential path, right?
Yeah.
And but there are like four of these that I think you listed out, and you've just indicated to them right now.
Yeah.
But the question, how much time do you have to work on this goal on a weekly basis, is actually something to take seriously, even though you do not know how you are going to do this, right? So it's not like you're going to now commit 30 hours a week to trying to get to the USA. I think that would be a mistake, unless you're walking there, like, you know, people from South America, which is not necessarily the thing that I recommend, right? That's not how you're going to get to the USA. But it may be that if this is a really important vision, you do need to, say, commit to 2 hours a week actually working on this problem. I'm just making that up as a time, Tom. You get to decide what, in fact, would be a selfish amount of time, given the other things you have going on. But if it's a real goal, it needs real time associated with it. And the reason we need to know how much time you're going to work on it is that is going to affect what kind of objectives and key results you set.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just by logic, I'm going to say, if you want to do this in any reasonable amount of time, you need to actually choose one or two paths to explore. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
So that would be a very reasonable objective, is to identify one or two viable paths for emigrating to the US.
Mm-hmm.
And how long do you think you should give? If you have 2 hours a week, you want to give yourself a few months for that? Do you think that's something to figure out in a year? I mean, I leave it to you.
I mean, ideally, I want to move there as soon as possible, but I can't sacrifice my career or certain other commitments quickly.
So this is the point, right?
Yeah.
We don't know how long it's going to take you. Now, is this important enough that if it takes longer than a year, it's still worth doing?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Right. So this is when you have a vision, when you have a long range goal, it could take a year. It could take a few years. And presumably that's okay, right? You don't know exactly how to do this. So hopefully that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you don't have to be planning in, well, I'm going to figure this out in 6 months and then I'm going to have to move in 9 months. Well, that would put me in trouble with my boss. That is not the way to think about it, mm-hmm. right? The way to think about it is you have the direction. And now from here, what do I need? Well, this direction is still pretty wide. I need to have at least one or two paths where I have figured out this might be viable or this might be viable, where I could take concrete action.
Yeah.
And that would be an objective that, let's say, I'm just going to arbitrarily say this. Suppose you decided, okay, in 6 months, I want to have figured out one or two viable paths for getting to the US. See, that would definitely, if you look at the criteria for an objective, it would definitely be meaningful, because you would definitely feel like you had moved toward the vision. It's an end in itself, in that you have made some kind of a decision. You're not in this kind of in between, well, I could do this, I could do this, I could do this. You can go in all directions. You would have made some kind of you would have reached some kind of a decision. And so it would be an objective endpoint. You see that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see.
And the question is, you know, I mean, I I'm making this up. You need to decide the time for yourself based on your availability. But I would think you could do that within 6 months at 2 hours a week.
I think so. I struggle to understand or think about the next step after that. Like, once I have the options, getting from the options to an actual execution.
You mean an execution today or an execution in 6 months?
Well, I mean,
that's so a totally
true
question.
Should I spend my time thinking about how I'm going to execute?
In 6 months?
Yeah.
No. Okay. What you need to do is you need to get to this objective endpoint, right? So part of the way that you achieve a long-range goal is by figuring out something that you can actually understand and figure out how to do now, And then you march to that. And when you get there, you look up, you actually can see a lot farther. You'll have learned a whole bunch of things. You'll have skills. It'll be much easier. You can, now you can look and see, okay, how do I take the next thing? Mm-hmm. Right. So you do not worry about, this is why you set an objective. Once you set an objective, you don't have to worry about what happens after the objective. You can now focus on get to that objective. And that simplifies everything, which is part of what you need to do when you're doing goal setting.
Okay.
So now we got to get back to a key result. So you only got a couple of hours a week. We need something that you could get done in the next couple of weeks. What do you think that you could do as your absolute first key result? That would be really helpful for making this decision within the next 6 months.
Some of it I've already done. So, I mean, the...
Well, then it's not a key result unless you need a step of write down your list of options or something like that.
Yeah. I guess the next key result would be to get a definite answer from my my contact for work in the U.S. in my company of whether or not they'd be willing to move me at some point.
Okay, great. And what would be involved, right? So it sounds like researching how to get a transfer within your company is something that could definitely take the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And that would be really worth doing. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, if it turns out that the answer is yes, and you get the information you need, you may actually be done with your objective 5.5 months early.
Yeah, it's true.
Right? Because you decide, I don't even need a second plan. But from what you said, it sounds like you want to have a backup plan.
Yeah. And my backup was if the work opportunity doesn't pan out, I might just go back to school, but in the US.
Okay.
As a next step.
So you see that you could have as the thing that you could then research there is what programs would I want to go to? Mm-hmm. Right. So it sounds to me like your objective is less than a 6 month objective. Sounds like it's a 2 month objective.
I think it sounds like
right
somewhere around that range. Yeah.
But you see, if you got to that place in 2 months, you would be in a very different position from where you are right now, because you would feel like you would actually take an action toward this goal, and you'd be ready to figure out, well, what's the next objective? And you might have, it might be two projects, an objective for a university and an objective for internal transfer. I don't know. Or maybe there's some third alternative we don't know about. Mm-hmm. But this is the way to do it, is not to get caught up on how am I going to do it? Well, when I get there, oh my God, what am I going to do? You need to trust the fact that that is a good place to get. I am going to know a lot more when I get there. And from there, I will be able to decide what the next hop is. You know, you it's like, you know, an airplane, until we get the supersonic transport, you know, you need to take a couple of steps to get from here to there to the other place. Mm-hmm. Right? And so get south or whatever it is, and then figure out what the next step is going to be.
Okay.
Is that helpful?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, great. All right. Thanks, Tom. So you can go back to the queue. We got a couple more people in the queue, but you can go back. If we have time, we'll do your other one too. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Great. Rachel, would you like to talk about your goal?
Yes. Hi.
Hi.
So, I didn't go read a handout before I wrote to you last night, so I don't know if what I wrote makes sense.
It did, yeah. But okay. I'm going to quiz you more.
Uh-huh. Okay. So what I had written for positive vision is not really a year-long project. It's more what I want to get done in the next month.
Okay.
So should I try to express it in a more...
Well, tell us what it is, okay. And then we'll figure out what the vision is and... Etc.
Okay, yeah. So what I wrote for the positive vision is I want to empower the accounting team at my company to efficiently manage lease payments and lease accounting at scale. This is part of my bigger vision, if you like. It's not just lease accounting and lease payments and so on, but all kind of accounting finance processes. And that's what
so
my
job
is.
Trying to get Yeah. You're trying to get everything to scale up, get everything automated as much as it can and scaled up as much as it can. And so so this is perfect, right? So you've got the long range vision, which is the whole finance team. You've cut out as much busy work as possible and things just run like clockwork.
Absolutely.
Right. And so, and you've got this one objective, which is to get the leases managed efficiently.
Yes.
And that actually is what you're saying is a 1 month goal. Okay, great.
Yeah. And this is a project that's been going on since last July. And I'm really hoping to, I'm quite far along in it. I'm hoping to hit some major milestones before the end of this month.
So can you tell us a little bit about what you've already done so that we're really clear on where you are versus where you need to go?
Sure. So last year we selected a vendor, a software vendor. Mm-hmm. We have all of our leases abstracted into this database. Mm-hmm. And we have them into the specialized leasing software. We just got kind of access to, we've done a lot of testing before then, but we just kind of mm-hmm. gotten access to have our hands on it directly about a week or two, week and a half ago. And so I've been doing a lot of cleanup and configuration and on my side, but my real goal is that I'm not in it at all. And I've got the team who's going to be in there all the time, able to use it and trust it and really use it instead of their current processes, which are more manual and labor intensive.
Okay, great. All right. And so why don't you tell us how you think you're going to get from here to there? And let me just say, I think we've got implicitly the positive vision and the negative vision.
Yes.
Right? I think that sounds really clear.
Yeah.
Okay. So what are the kinds of things you were thinking you needed to do?
So, well, some of them, they're already in progress. So I have a meeting tomorrow with a key player in that department to get more input about what customizations they want and need versus mm-hmm. just the base product that I can implement. What custom fields they want, what kind of reporting they want to make sure they can do. So that's one dimension. There's still some data cleanup that I'm continuing to work on. It's probably 90% clean, but there's a lot in there. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be learning from the team and then, whatever, depending on how that goes, I'm going to be, implementing, and I'm sure there'll be a few phases of that.
Okay.
Yeah. And training. Probably okay. Using some training materials.
Okay. So that's good. I'm glad you said training, because the thing that I was concerned about is I hadn't yet heard anything that involved them using the program.
Right.
And the whole goal is to get it so that they use the program.
100%.
Right. So one of the things that I think is helpful to think at this stage, where the objective is basically they're off and running and using this program, and right now you're babying it, you're twiddling with it. They aren't in it at all, if I hear correctly. Is that right?
That's, they have access, but yeah, no one's been in it actively except me. Yeah.
Right. Okay, great. So one of the things that I would say is really important with the key results, that you find key results that you see materially move you toward your objective. And so like you're cleaning up data and you're implementing things that they want, that you could go through that path, but you could imagine a path which has a whole lot of Rachel tasks going on indefinitely.
Yeah.
Before they start doing the work.
Yeah, and that won't work.
That is, and the problem with that is that means that if you get overcommitted, it doesn't happen, right? Yeah. So I think it's actually really helpful, because the goal is to get them to do it. Let's look at these two things you said. One was the cleanup of the data. Mm-hmm. Who is going to be worrying about that kind of thing once it's off your hands?
Yeah. Obviously not me, right?
Yes.
So what I'm hoping to do is just to concretize. So we had something like 100 leases that were in part of the initial data set. Many months have gone by. We have, a dozen more leases, let's say. Mm-hmm. Those have not been processed in. So I'm hoping to have them do that processing, with handholding or questions to me as needed. But that's kind of the way I'm thinking about it.
Right. So this is a key result. So a key result is get so-and-so to enter all the data and I sign off on it. So you'll like check her and you'll be available for resources, but she's the one who actually does it.
Well, that's the beauty of it, that our software partner, their AI and so on, the data will come in. So all we need to do is check it.
All you need to do is check it. So it may be to get, but okay.
But it's, so all, who, it's not a small task. It takes that's great. Effort, but yeah.
Right. I mean, that's fantastic. But who's going to talk to them about bringing in the data?
Right. So yeah, I need to empower the team to do that. And that's,
right.
Yeah,
so you see,
gonna
this
be
is
a scope soon. Yep.
Right. So this may be, I don't know if this is different from what you were already going to do, Rachel, mm-hmm. but I think it's really important to make this explicit that the key results, you may have various steps that you take that are just you, but the key results should materially move you toward the team's independence.
Right.
And so you, because, you know, you have a lot of choice about how you set what the goals are. You can break a task down in a gazillion different ways, but the way that you mm-hmm. want to break it down is the way that you see that, yes, oh my God, if we get that done, yes, it is getting off my plate and onto their plate. Yes, they are starting to use it. You know, like you might even have an interim objective that within 2 weeks, everyone on the team has actually been in and used this system. I'm just making that up. I don't know if that's reasonable or not. But
it's interesting. Yeah.
But you know, if you want it to be in 1 month that they're using it, you know, that can't happen. They can't go in for the first time 3 days in advance.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, right. That's true. Yeah. Some people right. have a longer learning curve than others. That's true.
Yeah.
I guess what I would, the reason I did ahead. Have put effort into data cleaning myself is that
yes.
I think if I go to them and say, hey, here's the database, and it is just rife with errors, then they're going to lose confidence that this can be, this will actually be valuable to them, and I won't get the buy-in. So I need to get the buy-in up front of, now look, it can produce exactly what you're doing now, but it's automated.
Well, but there's going to be errors in the future, right?
Yeah.
So who is going to correct those errors?
Oh, they will. Yeah, for sure.
Well, and when you say they, but is it one person? Is it two people? Is it three people?
Currently, there are two people on my team.
Okay, great. So both of them need to be able to correct errors.
Yes.
So why can't you have a group project where the three of you correct all the errors?
We can once I have, yeah, we can.
Okay. All I'm saying is, you see, reconceive it as instead of, well, I need to get their buy-in, you know, just be completely transparent with them. This is going to be huge.
I mean, I'll tell you, okay, so the reason it is that they have their day job. So they have their regular work, which is, mm-hmm. you know, they work very long hours.
Okay.
Because they don't have this automated process yet. So I'm trying to save them from that. They're behind it, but they also don't have a lot of extra hours in their day right now to do the historical cleanup. So I think that's kind of been the battle all along.
But this is great. So this is why you get creative. When you're clear on what the goal is, which mm-hmm. is to get them to be trained in all of this stuff, and you say, well, one of the obstacles is they don't have a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you have the three of you do this together, but they together do 10% of them, and you do 90% of them, but they actually do 10% of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it is, again, this is a small tweak from what you were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do it in such a way that they actually do 10% of them, you have, in fact, started training them. You've trained them while you were actually clearing up the data. You've gotten them to actually go into the system. It hasn't impacted their work that much. You field their questions sooner rather than later. It actually moves you towards what really matters, because what really matters is that they start using the system.
Yeah.
And so it's not large. Let me say something that I try to say in every class I give, and Rachel's heard it before, so she knows, but I don't know your work, right? I'm here kibitzing about, I hear what I say, and then I suggest this or I suggest that or the other thing. You know, you're the person on the ground who really knows the details. And this Rachel coming back with me with this objection, this is going to happen for you too. When you're doing your own, you come up with these ideas and then you come up with an objection. Well, that's okay. One of the reasons that you think about this in terms of the longer range vision and you have your really get focused on how do I achieve that objective, the thing that really matters, getting them to use the system. You hold that in mind because that allows you to be more creative. So no problem that a problem comes up. Okay, we got this, which we think would be good, and this is a problem. Okay, how do we put these together? And you see, I mean, I just made a slight tweak on what you were going to do, but it keeps the vision.
Yeah, no, this is helpful. So I think what I'm thinking now is what I would like to have, what I would like to kind of offload to them, if you will, or, you know,
or get them involved in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, get them to do is there's some data entry that has to happen for items that aren't in our leases. So for example, some states charge sales tax on rent. Mm-hmm. That tax rate is known by the team, but it's not in the lease itself. So they have to just go in the system and put the tax rate in Arizona is such and such. Mm-hmm. And I can show them where to go and put that in, but then have them actually do it for all the applicable leases because they know which ones those are. They can also put in the CAM, anything else like that that isn't part of the lease. And I think that will give them comfort in navigating the system, which will help a lot. So
perfect.
I think that's the next
right. So you've just carved out another little thing,
yeah,
a little key result that they can do that would be helpful. That
and it's different forward. Than what I was thinking. I was thinking to have them put together a list and like we could, but I think if they should just do the whole thing, I think that's much better.
Right. And it's not, and if I'm hearing correctly, it's also not such an onerous job, mm-hmm, that it will, you know, that there'll be a big pushback because, oh my God, we're too busy.
It's not, because not all the leases have these kind of provisions. So it probably is only like 10% like you hypothesized.
Right. Yeah. Right. Okay, great. So so are you complete? Do you get, is this helpful for how to break this down?
Yeah, it is. And can I also say, I sent you this email last night saying like, I really want to get this proof of concept done. And I did finish it today. And because I kept thinking, I'm going to tell Jean I finished it. So.
All right. Fantastic.
That's very
great, Rachel. That's fantastic. I'm delighted to hear that.
Thank you.
All right. Terrific. All right. Wida, you have a goal you'd like to talk about?
Sure. The larger goal has to do with kind of getting clearer on my values and my purpose.
Okay, great.
Professional and personal. Mm-hmm. So kind of branching into two different directions. But before that, I think the larger vision, even beyond that, is to just feel more fulfilled in my career and in my life.
So okay.
That big umbrella is to feel more fulfilled. And then one of the objectives is to get clearer about my values and mm-hmm. my purpose, both again, personally and professionally. And I don't know if this goes with that, but kind of decide on really where I want to focus my business. You know, I've been in business for over 25 years and I want to retire or start my next chapter, as we once talked about, mm-hmm. within the next, you know, three, four years. And I kind of want to know more about what that will look like for me. I want to have more of a vision of what kinds of consulting I would do at that point in my life. I'm not going to completely stop working, but I only really want to work on the projects that are fulfilling and that touch upon those values and my purpose. And so I need, right now, I have to take a lot of different assignments that are not always as fulfilling, but mm-hmm. they're paying the bills. But I want to be able to set myself up for that.
Right. Okay, great. So let's just go through the three levels with this too, because I think it will be helpful for everybody. And I will tell you that these are a couple of different things, because your long range goal is really a happiness goal,
mm-hmm.
Wida, and which we all have in a certain sense. You know, the happiness is, it, I mean, it, you know, Ayn Rand said the purpose of morality is for you to be happy. The reason you have principles and guidelines and things like that is so that your life can be happy. And I wrote all these articles, and the reason you have a central purpose is because it organizes your life and it makes it easier to be happy, right? So, you know, that is the big all end all for a lot of major parts. And I do think we need to pick either professional or personal for the purposes of this discussion, because they're different.
Yeah.
And I mean, you could do this with either one, but I think we should pick one for now. So do you want to talk professional? Is that what you'd really like to do?
No.
You want to talk personal?
Yeah,
Okay, fantastic. Okay, see now, so this is very important. I just want you guys to register. This is what happened in this conversation with Weta is often the case that it's there's a pile of stuff. And when you talk about the pile of stuff, probably 85% of it, Weta, was about business, right? Mm-hmm. It was about what kind of consulting would you do and that you didn't want to stop working and, mm-hmm. you know, right? Mm-hmm. And that was most of the words were about business. So that, but when I said, well, there you talked about two things here, let's pick one. So I said business because that's what I thought I heard. But no, so just like with, you know, Weta also knows you got to push back and you got to say what it is. But no, personal is what you want. So part of the thing you do when you do goal setting is you kind of clean up, well, if I'm thinking about goals, I want to be thinking about goals that are all one set of means ends, right? So if what you're thinking about is your personal happiness, that's not so much career. It's not completely unrelated to career, but it's a different kind of set of things that you're doing. Like, for example, you might be working on your relationships, or you might be working on developing hobbies, or you might be working on work-life balance. And these are all things that might be going into your personal life. Those would all be means to an end to the personal life that you wanted. Whereas if what it was that you wanted to have the ideal consulting business when you retire, then it would be a different set of means and ends to the perfect consulting business, which would involve, you know, say, identifying which kinds of clients you liked and, you know, whatever. I don't know. I'm just making things up. And so part of what you want to do, and one of the reasons it's helpful to think in terms of visions, objectives, and key results is every goal is a means end sequence. Every goal that you have is going to have, it's a means to farther ends, and there are shorter term goals that are means to it. But there are different paths. And so you want to pick one of these to sort out when you're doing goal setting. And just that actually clarified that, in fact, the really important thing is personal. So tell me, what's the long range vision, positive vision for your personal life?
A home by the water.
A home by the water. Okay. That sounds delightful.
And I would like to be a woman of leisure.
Home by the water, woman of leisure.
Yes. I want to do things like ballroom dancing, which I signed up for. So I took a lesson or two. So I want to do that. I'd love to compete in ballroom dancing. And to me, that's like being a woman of leisure, like just really doing the things that bring me joy.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is that you really want to have Weta time. And this is basically, you're talking about post-retirement. You may still be working some, but you really want to have Weta time.
Yep.
Right. Okay. Now this is, so that's the vision. And, you know, I don't know how long a range. Is that something that you're hoping for in 5 years, in a few years, in longer? What are you thinking?
Three or four years.
Okay, great. So let's talk about what is the great. So say 3 to 4 years, you're a woman of leisure. What do you think you need to do in the shorter term, like within 2022, in order to start moving in that direction? What do you think needs to actually be accomplished in this calendar year?
Yeah, I think I need to get clearer on my values.
So why is that? So tell me about that.
Because, for example, I have friends who have bucket lists, right? Mm-hmm. And the things that they want to do that they see as being fulfilling for themselves, whether it's mm-hmm. to travel and different things that they, but they're clear, like, I want to do this. And this is what I think is going to, you know, again, enhance my well-being and how I see my life and the things I want to achieve in my life. So I realized as I was trying to think about, you know, what's going to be my bucket list, what do I want to do? And I was drawing a blank.
Well, of course, but you just told me House by a Water Ballroom Dance competitor.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Those are two, and the House by the Water, I have to figure out how I'm going to make that happen. But I think if I tune more into my values, and so one of the things that I would have on the objective is to, I have some exercises on discovering your values.
Okay.
That's something that would be short term that I would want to do, complete those exercises, let them translate into kind of concrete statements that help me to be clear about the values.
I mean, you could definitely do this. I'm a little bit concerned that if you have a 3-year goal to get to the house by the water and doing these fun things, that there's actually some hustling that needs to be done this year, that I'm concerned that if you make the main goal for this year to get clearer on your values, you're not actually going to move the needle to get to that house on the water. That's what I'm concerned about. So this is the thing that I think is very important when you're doing goal setting, is you need to take your seriously. If you want to be in this different state in 3 years, this is a fairly major change in your situation, right?
Yes.
You understand what I'm saying?
I do. And I guess, for me, I'm trying more to think more concretely to discover, is it really the house by the water? Or is it maybe a vacation there I go by the water 3 times a year, but not necessarily own a home? So I'm still trying to wrestle with what it is.
Okay. All right. So you don't want to buy a house by the water this year.
That's not what you want to do. Not necessarily, right. But I want to be able to vacation then, you know, a month out of the year.
Right.
By the water.
Right. See, now, so this is something that might actually be a very practical goal, which ties into figuring out what your values are, which is to figure out how in 2022 you could take a full month's vacation, or maybe two, twice.
The thought of that is heavenly. Yes, I'm inspired already.
Okay, you see, now it would take a lot of planning and work, and you would need to do, you know, some of the business stuff you were talking about, figuring out how you're going to do consulting, figuring out what your best clients are, that kind of stuff. You would actually wind up doing that in the course of figuring out how to carve out, and you get to pick the month, right? So what month do you think you want to take off in 2022?
In 2023.
No, 2022. So it's okay for you. If it needs to be February, it's okay if it's February 2023. But if it's September, it's going to be September of 2022.
Well, I would say February of 2023. However, let's look a little more around my birthday. How about October?
October, birthday month.
Part of October.
October. So October, WIDA is going to be doing something really fun. And it may not be the thing that you retire to in 3 years, but it will be an incredible experiment in WIDA retirement, woman of leisure.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And it's going to, and so what, so you see, we now have an objective that you can see how WIDA lit up here. The reason WIDA lit up is that we figured out an objective that she sees would really move her toward her long-term vision.
Yes.
And that is the key. You got to get an objective that really moves you toward your long-term vision. Mm-hmm. Now we need a key result, something. Now, how much time can you put into this? You're a busy woman. You got a busy business.
Yes, I do.
How much time can you put into this on a weekly basis?
I'm not exactly sure what I'm putting into yet.
Well, you don't have to know what it is. We're going to figure that out once we know how much time you're willing to commit.
Okay. To have those couple of weeks in October?
4 weeks, a month, the whole month of October, my dear. The whole month of October.
Okay. I definitely want to put in 2 hours a week.
2 hours a week. Okay, great. So 2 hours a week, solid time. Let's come up with a first one or two key results of what you need to get done. So, So what do you think is the first thing you need to get done that you could actually figure out and implement in the first 4 hours? Because that's what 2 weeks would be.
I guess it would have to do with me feeling okay about stepping away from the business for that long.
So
I've never done that.
Right. So take the 4 hours to actually work through what are all the logistical business issues. What would have, you know, what would I have to do to be able to do this business wise, right?
Yeah.
So, and what I think you're saying is, what you need at the, I'm making this up. This is, you know, you're gonna do what's reasonable for you, but write yourself a one page summary of how it is that you're gonna manage to do this with the business. You know, an overview of what you think you need to do in order to do this for the business.
Okay.
And it may be that your next key result is to deal with all of the emotions around what that would take. Does that make sense?
It's actually easier than I thought.
See, when you really know what matters most, and you use that as the North Star to keep you heading towards something that really matters, it gets all of your motivation behind it. And it helps you actually be more creative in figuring out what to do. See, it's, I mean, the way that, the reason I suggested the 1 month a year was because I was trying to think, well, she really wants this time of leisure. She doesn't know exactly what it is, but that's, those were the words you were giving me. So leisure, oh. How can she get leisure in the first, you know, how can she get some material version of that in the first year? And that's how I came up with that. So it's the clarity about what you really want that then lets you see possibilities. And there may be something else. Like I knew when I was a, when I was an intern at RCA Astro Electronics, a long time ago, there was a tech who saved up all his vacation. So he took 3 day weekends every day during the summer. And, you know, that would be an alternative. You could go on a 4 day work week or you could go on a 3 day work week. That would be a different kind of thing. I'm just saying that that would be, it's not, I came up with one idea. This would be a different idea. It would be the same kind of thing. Maybe when you work out what it would take to take a whole month off, you're not ready for it. But this year you could do a 4 day work week or maybe, and then next year take the month off. I don't know. But you see, that's the way to think about it.
Yeah, I love it.
Okay, great. All right, terrific.
Thank you.
Thanks, Wida. All right. So we have a couple more volunteers, and I'm willing to stay on if you are. So, so Tom, I'm going to go to the people who I haven't talked to yet, if that's okay. Larry, nice to see you. Gee, I'm not hearing you yet. Can you check your audio and make sure it's working? Gee, very, very soft. That's a little better. Say something else.
Hold on.
Yeah,
this
I heard
now?
You. Now I hear you. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I was just making sure. Yeah, I was saying, well, nice to see you too. And it's also, I'm actually excited for Wida as well.
Yeah, right.
It's got me excited. And I'm not even close to any situation like that. but I guess my situation is a bit twofold. So one would be defining, one would be defining what I want to take in college, and kind of how that would branch into what type of career that I want to indulge myself into. And I bet, I guess the shorter aspect of is actually getting into college in the first place. I've taken the first step. I did some research and I've already applied to the college that I already want to go to.
Oh yeah. Do you mind sharing what that college is? Is that okay?
Yeah, it's a community college. It's and I think it's the best option for me because it's walking distance.
Okay.
And I don't I've waited too long. So I don't know how to drive. So I think it would be nice staying near the house, learning how to drive while also going to that college for 2 years and then transferring to a,
and then you
like
can transfer
university.
Wherever you want. Absolutely.
Yes.
Totally. Okay, great. So then let's start with the vision. Do you have, I mean, before you can figure out what courses you want to take or anything, you need to have at least some general direction. I think you indicated, I also got an email actually from Larry on something else. Tell us what you you generally your thoughts are about what you want to do?
So originally it was just broadly philosophy.
Okay.
But that has to be delimited, of course. It's too big. And then I've
Hold on. What does it mean to you, philosophy? Because, I mean, what does it mean to you?
It just means studying ideas and the importance of them.
Okay.
The application to them. And as I've continued down, I was like, well, I kind of like, I would presume to be your peer. I kind of like Tara Smith, a lot of her ethics and stuff. And I was into ethics for a while. Uh-huh. And then I've noticed I kind of got out of that a little bit. So I guess right now my general interest would be intellectual history.
Okay.
That has to be delimited as well.
But let me see. So you don't have, so the thing that I was thinking was, are you thinking, gee, I want to be a professor who researches and teaches people and writes books? Or gee, I want to be a cultural commentator who does stuff? Or gee, I want to run a business related to this? Do you have in that kind of a, that's like three possible areas that if you wanted to be an intellectual, I can name you people who do all those things. Do you have any sense at all about which kind of direction you want to go?
So kind of three of them, actually.
okay.
So I definitely do eventually want to write books.
Okay.
I also want to have a business, but like not a big one, just kind of something on the side. Maybe it's a blog or something that people pay for, providing some type of service, something similar to what maybe you and Don Walken mm-hmm. do, Harry Benswinger, the HBL, mm-hmm. something similar to that. I think that would be very enjoyable. And I also want to be like kind of a public intellectual as well.
Okay. All right. And you're just starting your college career at this point.
I'm still in high school, but just
about. You're still in high school. Right. Exactly. Right. So the great thing about this, and I kind of alluded to this earlier, is that there's actually a path for high school kids who want to go in some fairly well-structured area, right? Which, you know, to become some kind of an intellectual, you can major in philosophy or history or, you know, psychology or whatever, and you can get a degree and you can then decide if you want to stay in academia. And if you don't want to stay in academia, you can find ways out of it. I mean, that's basically what I did, is I decided I didn't want to stay in academia. The issue for me, Larry, and this is where I really feel like I don't know enough about colleges right now. I would say so can I just give you some advice as opposed to actually work on the goals for a second? Is that okay with you if I just
have freedom? Go ahead.
Okay. All right. The thing that I would be concerned about, and that I would, let me just blurt it out. The most important thing for a young person, in my view, at this stage of life, is that they really learn the foundations solidly, and that they really learn how to think, which is somewhat of an issue because of the way things are taught in academia, right? So there are some things that you can learn that actually you will probably learn better in a community college than you will learn at a high-priced university. Like, I mean, I would actually take a really generic first couple of years. You actually probably want basic science courses, because you know, in addition to the basic philosophy courses and basic literature courses and basic history courses, because you actually do want a broad background on which to build, right? Because if you're an intellectual, it's very important to be able to connect to other branches and not be like down in some specialty that's so narrow that only, you know, 10 experts in the world are interested in. Because it sounds like you actually want to be something that has an impact on the culture. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. So if I were you, what I would be plotting is, how do I get to the other side of a four-year college with a brilliant mind able to write on the topics that I want? Does that make sense?
Yes.
I mean, I made up that vision for you, but you can probably make up it. That may not be exactly the right vision for you. What do you think? What actually would resonate like this? Because if you think, because this is basically an educational portion of your life.
Right.
So what skill do you want to have mastered on the other side of college? And it doesn't, you don't have to be an expert yet on the other side of the first 4 years, because the first 4 years are to lay a foundation. And then as a result of that foundation, you will be clear. Like if you want to do intellectual history, you will have taken a bunch of history courses and you will know some history professors and you'll know a little what's going on in the area and you'll be able to talk to people and you'll be able to get recommendations of, hey, you know, this guy at University of Pittsburgh is really terrific. Maybe you should try to work with him, or, you know, this, whatever it is, right? You'll actually have made the connections. You don't have to figure out what the specialty is going to be. I don't think, certainly not today. You can make sure you get a foundation and know that in the process of getting that foundation, you will figure out the specialty. And then by the third or fourth year, you'll be able to take the steps. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I guess from this perspective, like I don't really need to know what angle I need to come from in going into intellectual history, as long as I do have a broad historical background, and then I can mold that.
Right. And I would say you probably need, you need some philosophy because you need the history of philosophy. You need some science because you probably need the history of science. You need some literature because you probably need the history of literature. You probably need a solid background. And that is going to take work on your part to get. You know, that's not what I'm describing is a classic Western civilization grounding. And that is like totally politically incorrect these days. But it's something that if you have that, if you say, you know, I want to come out with like writing ability. Again, I just am making this up. I'm just making this up, Larry. But this is what, and maybe that speaking ability is actually more important to you. I don't know. But writing and speaking go together so closely that that if you have that would then help you figure out like what professors you want to work. Because like one of the things that you're going to need to do in college, again, like I feel like I don't know the current college scene, so I'm nervous about giving you advice. So you should take, just like I told Rachel and Wita, you got to take everything I say with a grain of salt, because I don't know your situation the way you know your situation. But one of the things you're going to want to be able to do is judge your teachers, right? You're going to want to be able to judge, is this person going to really be help me to move forward to be the kind of intellectual I want to be? And if they can't, what am I going to do in this course to make up for that, right? That's going to be the kind of challenge that you're going to have.
I would say the to answer your question, the skill that I definitely want to come out of college with, well, I wouldn't even say college because I'm in the OAC.
Yeah, okay.
They will teach it is writing. I want to develop my writing skills a lot better than they are now. I have been writing for some years now, so I guess I would be really good now for my peer group.
Sure.
But in comparison to like actual philosophic writing, yeah, there's technical errors and, you know, some thinking errors. And I do have the book that you recommended on, I believe Paper Tiger, it's Writing and Thinking.
Oh, yes. Right.
I do have
Stedman. That. Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's a lovely book. I mean, Leonard Peikoff recommended it. And then, I wrote the book recommendation because I wanted to get it in print, and Fred Weiss said he'd print it if I would write a book recommendation for it. So that's why it has my recommendation, because I was the one willing to write a recommendation for TIA at that point. Yeah. Okay, great. So yeah, there's lots to learn on that. So I guess what the thing that I'm not sure about is, so here's what I would say. If the goal is that you want to be a top-notch writer, then that will, in fact, help you figure out what you should be taking. You've chosen where you want to go. That will, in fact, help you figure out what courses you should take. because you can do some research and find out which of those courses are going to have things that are going to involve essays on topics that you are that you would be mildly interested in, right? I mean, you see, if you have that as a goal, you can then put that in with whatever the curriculum requirements are. And you can even make up your own things. Like if you take, I'm just making this up. Suppose you decide to take a physics class, and I'm just saying that in general because I think it is helpful for people to have a broad background. But I don't know if you actually want to take a physics class or not. But suppose you did. You don't. Okay.
No.
Okay. All right. Well, then I won't push physics. But take English Lit, right? Let's take English Lit. If you want to do writing, English Lit actually could be a super great class because you will be reading writing and you could be thinking about the writing that you were reading and, of course, writing essays for that class. So having a clear idea of what I want to be able to, I want to be able to write great prose with philosophical implications or whatever you want to say by the end of this thing, that could actually give you guidance on what courses you choose and also on how you select the teachers. You could actually go interview the teachers and talk to them about how is writing involved and, you know, what's their view of writing and pick the courses with the teachers where you think you'll learn something. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I guess the only aspect of it that's still left, like it's still a void. It's again, finding out my interest because my interest, or if you look at my bookshelf and you just kind of look at everything, it's like, what are you reading? It's like everywhere. It can go from, I don't even know, like it's just a large plethora of like topics.
But that's good. And that, so you're in a great position for college because the real purpose of college is not to specialize, you know, to some tight thing. It's to get a basic grounding in what are the interesting subjects out there. So you don't have to specialize. And particularly if what you want to learn is writing, it will actually be very interesting to you to be, take, you know, different kinds of history classes, different kinds of, you know, maybe an anthropology class would be interesting. I mean, maybe an, you know, I don't know. I'm just making that up. And take the different classes with an idea of I would definitely take college as a time where you are broadening your horizons and you're learning about what's out there. And you don't have to decide. You get to find out what you find interesting. And to some extent, you're using what the professors are offering as they think these things are interesting. And to some extent, I would definitely be guided by like classic ideas about what are the basic things that is good to know about. And take the more general classes that you can get and then find the interesting things. You know, the great thing about finding your interests if that's what your goal is to understand exactly what your interests are, values are everywhere. I guarantee you can take any page of any text, and even if it's boring, you can read it and you can look and say, okay, where can I find a value on this? Like when I'm in a lecture that I think is boring, you know what I do?
I start critique them.
Oh, you've seen that on
I've seen that.
Yeah.
I've seen that.
I do that. I literally do that. And suddenly it's extremely interesting. Now, this is partly because I'm interested in speaking, but you're interested in speaking too, right?
Correct.
And so I start critiquing them and I become really interested in how they're explaining their points. I think more about their points than if I were not engaged. You could do the same thing with any page of writing. If the page of writing is boring, you can look at it and say, why is this so boring? Or why is this so unclear? And you will learn something really interesting from that page of writing. So you're at a point where you get to, and I think this is proper for college, you get to actually just find out what's out there. You get to find the values. You get to basically make the values out of it. And you don't need to worry. Part of the great thing about the four-year curriculum, you know, I said, I guarantee to get a degree, like if you want to transfer after 2 years, there's probably 8 courses you need to take. Right? You probably need to have, I mean, I don't know. So I went to college. I entered college in 1981. So my data is out of date. But in the first 2 years, I had several friends who transferred after the sophomore year. And they had to have, there was a list of things they had to have. There were basically eight courses. They had to have essentially the same eight courses that I had to take my first 2 years. And so you can find out what those are. They're probably some general courses. They're, if you know, you know people who are, you can find out what the transfer requirements are for how many units you need and what is the distribution. And you have actually parameters on what it is that you should take, because they do. I mean, when I was at MIT, I decided I was going into electrical engineering. So freshman year, everyone took calculus, physics, chemistry, and some humanities. That's, everyone took those four classes. You could choose which version of them you were taking, but every single freshman took those four classes. And at the end of freshman year, you had to choose your major. At the end of freshman major, I chose electrical engineering. And every class, with three or four classes were electives, I could choose between three or four things. All the others were spelled out, except for my humanities, for the rest of my time there. Because if you wanted to get an EE degree, you had to do all these things. Now, it's a little different in the humanities. You have more choice because typically if you can, they don't all have to concentrate in one way, or you can, but there'll be a binder of, well, what do you need to take to get a degree? And it should actually give you some guidance on that as to what's needed.
Do you think it's a problem in young teenagers to usually fall into love with the product of something rather than like the process of how do you get that product? So an example is that I was interested in psychology because I've read a bit of Edwin Locke's work.
Mm-hmm. Person who inspired me in psychology.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, he's so great. So I fell in love with that. And then I kind of did a little bit more research in psychology, and I found like Freud and B.F. Skinner. And I was like, you know, I really don't want to read these guys. But that's the process that's required of you to become like a psychologist, is reading those people and understanding.
Oh, well, not necessarily. So I would definitely look into this because, you know, Ed did all his writing in organizational behavior, which is in the business school. And to get into business school, you need, you could do an intellectual history undergrad and then get into business school as a graduate student. Or you could do a business major undergrad focused on organizational behavior. So, you know, you wouldn't have to read any Freud. You could read all Ed all the time. So that's something that's worth also looking out for is, so I feel a little bit at loose ends because I don't really know what to suggest for you, Larry, but one of the disadvantages of the current educational system is that it's very splintered, and a lot of stuff I think is not all that useful. And if you want to get a good Western civilization background, you have to work at it. But one of the good things about this is, if you know some things are completely useless, like you don't want to read Freud, you can probably avoid that. There's probably no one in academia who will say, well, you have to read that or you have to read that, because they're all relativists and say, well, you can kind of do your own thing. So you can kind of put together, if you know that you don't want something, you can do that.
I guess one last aspect, doesn't Adam Mozoff talk about a lot of intellectual history as well?
Yeah. I mean, he has a law degree. He has an undergraduate philosophy degree and an MFA in philosophy, and then he got a law degree. So there are a lot of ways. If you're interested in intellectual work, there are a lot of directions you can go. And it doesn't matter that much what your undergraduate is. My undergraduate is electrical engineering, right? I took one class in psychology at the University of New Mexico, and then applied to graduate school in psychology. And that's how I got my master's in psychology. And I left without the PhD. But so I wouldn't worry too much about that. See, you're in an unusual position because you're at the OAC. I'd focus on developing the skills that you want to get. And don't worry too much about the school. You know, Greg Salmieri, who I'm sure you know, went as an undergrad to Trenton State College, which is now College of New Jersey, which is not a well-known school. it didn't matter. It didn't, he did the things that he wanted to do at that school because he had an idea of what he wanted to learn. And then that's what put him in a place that he could then go on and get his PhD or do the things that he's done. So your clarity about the skills you want to learn is more important. And in the meantime, you should go after these things that you're interested in. Go after the things you're interested in. Don't worry about having to make a final decision on that, is what I would, that's my advice. I'm not 100% sure that's good advice, but that's the best I can do.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. I definitely appreciate it.
Okay, great, Larry. All right. I really wish you the best.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, great. Karen, so we are running a little bit late, but let's try to do Karen briefly, okay? And by the way, both Larry and Tom, there are some advice in the chat, actually, for you. So Karen, would you like to share what your goal is?
Sure, this is just a very little goal. So it's perfect for the time that we perhaps
have. For the final, okay, great.
I would dearly like to see my best girlfriend's grandchildren and her daughter more often. I see my girlfriend, she lives right up the street from me, but her daughter and her children live not so far away, but during COVID and we're still restricted here in Canada. So I don't, and they're not overly concerned and I'm not at this point either. So, but I have a busy life and so does she. Right. And previously I would see them all the time at my girlfriend's house up the street, six blocks up the street. But now I only see them when it's an occasion. I saw them at Christmas and I've listened to what you were saying earlier on and about, I thought something that was very interesting was just to take one step and the rest might follow. So I've been trying to think of certain things that I might do with them. You know, I skate and I might take them skating or something like that. But then I realized maybe what I just need to do is just communicate with my girlfriend's daughter and just go and see them, you know, like just make a day to go over and drive over and see them, because I know that she just loves to see me and I love to see her, and the kids crawl all over me and they're just little, they're like,
right, okay, great,
3, 7. So, but I keep finding that I feel like I need to do something different. And she's I just realized, I think I've sort of, from listening to this, may have answered
your own problem. Yeah. Because the big thing is actually spend time with them more often.
Yes.
And what you figured out is a very doable key result in the next 2 weeks is show up and spend time with them. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. That sounds wonderful.
Okay.
Yeah, when you focus on what's most meaningful, it clarifies everything else.
Yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So true. Thank you.
All right, great, Karen. That is a nice, easy way to finish. Mm-hmm. All right, everybody. Well, I hope you guys found this interesting. This was an experiment. So you're going to get a feedback. Oh, I have to tell you what the promo is. I totally forgot to tell you the promo. Oh, my God. Well, you'll get an email about this, too. So this is a promo for the launch program. So the kind of coaching you're seeing here, we do in the launch program at the beginning. People set these 8-week goals and then I coach them to make sure it's something that is actually going to, you know, so that they can get results. And, you know, I'm not saying we have 100% success, but we've had a lot of really great things happen. And the next one starts March 5th. And it's a little bit intense. In part because there are some classes that I recommend you listen to before you go into launch. So we have this special offer. If anyone wants to join launch early tomorrow, one day only, it will be open. Now it's the normal price is $369 for just the 2 months with the 2 months in the Thinking Lab. And usually I make people pay for any month. If they come in early, they've got to pay for the early months. But one day only tomorrow, you'll be able to just pay the $369 and you'll get all of February in the Thinking Lab, which means that you will have a month to do the courses. And it just so happens that the two classes in February are going to be, in effect, review sessions. I'm creating a new version of my Do What Matters Most, and we're going to be doing review versions of Do What Matters Most in the first two classes, the two classes in February, and we'll do a third one of those in March. So it happens to be a very, very good time if you want to join launch. You will join tomorrow. Now it's going to be open tomorrow, 24 hours, and then it's going to close, and you won't be able to join until late in the month. So if you want to do it tomorrow, it's the only day. So that's your promo. You're going to get an email. But the other thing is, I'm very curious about how this was, and I hope you'll give me, fill out the feedback and tell me. I had fun, and I hope you did too. So with that, I think we'll draw a line and wish everybody a good evening. Thank you.
Thank you so much,
Jean.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Jean.